Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We have a very exciting show today, and it's the first in a three-part series on social media within franchising. My guest today is Amy Nichols, the CEO, president, and founder at Dogtopia, a full-service dog daycare, spa, and boutique franchise. An avid participant within social media, especially Twitter, Amy will share her thoughts and insights about using social media on a national scale and at local levels for the benefit of all within the Dogtopia franchise organization. In addition, Amy and I will discuss how social media may be utilized as an effective extension of public relations efforts, something that Amy has done quite well. I would like to thank Lizette Pertle, CEO over at Expansion Experts, and Matt Kelly, the CEO and founder at Selligan, who were both my guests on last week's show as we talked about franchise startups and the challenges and issues they faced. The podcast of that show is available on demand on the Franchise Today site at www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. While there, check out our other podcast as well. And as we always say, we basically have all of our shows on live on podcast, or are actually on demand within 15 or 20 minutes of our show, and we leave them on indefinitely. As I announced during the last few shows, a new internet radio show, Franchise News Radio, will debut in April. Initially, Franchise News Radio will be a weekly 15-minute show. Every week, we'll provide insight and commentary about news reported, published, and posted in national and regional publications, online sites, and yes, even within social media. Hey, can you say accountability? It should be interesting to say the least, so stay tuned for more details. I know I brought it up last week, but it's important to say again, franchising is definitely going to miss Matt Shea. We do wish Matt the best of luck in his new position with the National Retail Federation. But hey, call me selfish. He did a great job for the IFA in franchising, and I hope the person who replaces him can do the same. Certainly, there will be some very big shoes to fill. So let's see what's going on in the franchise world on LinkedIn. This week, I posted, a discussion, financial performance representations, a list of things to avoid. The inspiration behind this post was the Franchise Seller's Handbook, authored by Warren Lee Lewis at Ackerman Centerfeet Attorneys at Law. Joe Caruso, a well-known franchise executive, attended on March 16th the Capital Area Franchise Association, otherwise known as CAFA, meeting where Charlene York provided copies of the handbook to all in attendance. Joe was so impressed with the handbook that he felt compelled to send me one, as we are both committed to best practices in franchising. Although the last package I did receive from Joe had a bunch of pasta and provolone cheese and pepperoni in it, and I did thoroughly enjoy that, but I enjoyed this one just as well. Hey, this handbook is a must-read for all within the franchise community, and especially those responsible for franchise sales and development efforts. A quick review of the handbook, although it's not to be construed as legal advice, you need to talk to your franchise attorney about legal advice, it made me realize the many of the questions franchise professionals have regarding what used to be called earnings claims and today are now referred to as financial performance representations, or FPRs. They're all within this concise reference guide. I'm sure I'll find it to be a very valuable resource myself moving forward, but hope other franchise professionals will use it as well. With respect to previous discussions on LinkedIn, Chapter 4 of this fine handbook, the chapter entitled Prohibited Franchise Sales Activities, will most likely answer any remaining questions about earnings claims and FPRs. At least it should for the individuals that want to do it correctly, answer the questions correctly, and for the ones that don't, they may just use this information to continue to manipulate and further justify their means to an end. As listed in Chapter 4, there are some examples of FPRs outside of an FDD that must be avoided. Please understand, this list must be avoided within social media as well. So a link to this or that is the same as showing it or saying it in person. You know, some of them are, as you know, like putting a link out there towards a chart or table or mathematical calculation that shows possible results based on a combination of variables. That's a no-no. Can't go ahead and tell them, look at that and do the math. That doesn't work. As well, a software program containing a spreadsheet with assumed cost percentages, another no-no. Copy of a published article which states that some franchisees have earned a specific amount. Very, very widely used. Not to be used in this situation. It's another no-no. A pro forma showing assumed low, medium, and high sales and costs based on actual average cost percentages is also frowned upon. Even comments such as, you will earn enough to own a new Porsche within a year, or you will break even in 6 to 9 months, or your sales will increase 20 to 30% if you convert to be a franchise outlet. Again, those are frowned upon as well. As well as additional comments such as the sales and cost projections in the pro forma prepared by your accountant look reasonable to me. That's something that's listed in this book as well. And, of course, the one that I hear a lot from people is, well, I was told I could realize 100% return on investment within the first year of operation. Obviously, that doesn't apply as well. And some of the borderline ones basically that refer to financial performance representations, but in a gray area also should be frowned upon. But again, it has to do with the full context of what's said to the prospect. And those include very generic terms such as, well, this franchise offers exceptional profit potential. Or if you want to know about typical sales, profit, and cost, you should talk with our franchisees. This is an opportunity of a lifetime. And the one that definitely is used a lot that needs to be people need to be careful with is your sales will depend on your location and how much effort you put into the business. You know, I'd like to take a moment to repeat a response from one of the discussions about FPRs that I both chuckle about but simultaneously shake my head about. Listen to this and keep in mind, I'm only repeating this, so please don't shoot the messenger here. This response came from a somebody within the franchising community on the West Coast, and he posted, my opinion would be this. If a non-related party writes, talks about, or disseminates information which touches on or reveals financial data about the concept, the franchisor cannot be in violation. Think about the franchisees in the system who reveal secrets and offer validation in an unedited manner and according to their own take on the subject. He goes on to say, what about the ordinary business broker who has a listing with all the juicy metrics in his info packet and all that can makes its way through the informal circuit and ethnic groups and social media comments? Certainly the franchisor cannot be held responsible for this. Well, to the individual that posted this comment, to the original post in the Franchise Executives LinkedIn group, I believe it's overdue that you get yourself a copy of the fine handbook I just mentioned before you wind up on the wrong side of things, including the wrong side of the law. Unless, of course, you intend to stay the course despite what is right or wrong, which I have to say is what I believe you'll continue to do. And, of course, that's very unfortunate for franchising. Anyway, a special thank you is in order to Warren Lee Lewis and his contributors, Shelley Weatherby, Charlene York, and Julia Badlance, I think is how it's preferred, for sharing their fantastic guide. There are many great discussions going on every day with the LinkedIn franchise discussion groups. So I encourage everyone within the franchise community to join LinkedIn if you're not already there. And I repeat, join the various franchise groups and participate in the discussions. You know, groups I recommend include franchise executives, franchise networking, franchise professionals, franchise sales, franchise world network, and, of course, the IFA group. There are others as well, so pick and choose a few and get with it. Social media and franchising, you know, both are about relationships. Both are about trust and both are about transparency. With this in mind, it's no wonder that we continue to talk about social media and franchising. I mentioned at the top of the show that today's segment of Franchise Today is a first in a three-part series on social media and franchising. Now, next week, the series is going to continue with Tasty Delights social media guru, BJ Emerson, as my guest, as BJ will have already returned fresh from attending Franchise Update's multi-unit franchising conference, which is currently going on in Las Vegas. So, BJ, if you're listening to us, hi. We'll be discussing social challenges facing multi-unit operators. Then the following week, we have a real special treat in store for all listeners as longtime public relations expert Rhonda Sanderson joins me as my guest. I'm really looking forward to talking with Rhonda. Our discussion will focus on integrating social media into existing PR programs. So be sure to mark your calendar accordingly. BJ Emerson on April 1st, Rhonda Sanderson on April 8th. But today is most important for everybody. We start the series with a very visible and active participant in social media, Amy Nichols. Amy is the CEO, president, and founder of Dougtopia. She appears to be everywhere. Within social media circles, absolutely. At franchise events and IFA functions, definitely. On Fox Business News, you bet. In the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, of course, and now right here on Franchise Today. Amy, welcome to Franchise Today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you here with us. You're certainly one busy, very active individual. How do you do it? Where do you find the energy?
Thankfully for me, I get to do what I'm passionate about, which was start my own business, and now franchising it has taken it to a whole other level. And I'm also very passionate about social media. I love it, which probably becomes pretty obvious when you see how much I do on it. But it really combines all the things that I really love. And when you love something, you make time for it. So.
Well, you didn't mention dogs in there.
Well, the business, meaning I get to start my own business, meaning dogs, which I will apologize in advance. We have our nap time going on right now here at Dogtopia, and a few of them are complaining about it. So
that is awesome. You know, I was really chuckling when, I was going through your bio and going through the various social media and other media where you're quite active and present and always seem to be interviewed and have a presence. And then as I read your bio, I realized, oh my God, she's running a business. She founded a business. She's doing all this. She's married. She has two kids. And I thought, where do you find the time?
Someone once asked me in an interview what I do for fun. And I said, really? When would I have time for that? So this, thankfully for me, you know, between my family and my business and everything, I'm doing all the things that I love. So I have no complaints when it comes to that, and I lead a very full life as a result.
Right. Well, that is great. Well, tell us a little bit about Dougtopia. How did it start, and basically, why and how did you eventually wind up thinking about franchising it?
Well, I started Dogtopia in 2002. That's when I opened my very first location, and that was in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, which is a nice suburb outside of the D.C. area. And it was the dog daycare business had really just begun. I mean, we're going on 8-10 years ago now. And while we saw it on the West Coast, we didn't really see too much of it on the East Coast, and certainly not in the suburbs yet. So I was convinced, though, that there was a real niche market there. I had been in telecommunications for 6 years prior to that and just decided that it wasn't where my heart was, and while I had been pretty successful at it, it didn't get me excited every morning to get up and go to work. So I thought, you know, this was time. It was a good time for me. I was actually engaged at the time and sprung that on my husband that I'm going to quit my job and start a doggy daycare business, which he supported 100%, thankfully, because it was quite the road the first year. But I think I really started thinking about franchising in the second full year open when that first store grossed over $1 million, and I thought, okay, in my mind, this is a real business. You know, it's not a hobby. We're not playing around. This is a real business when you can bring in that kind of revenue. So we started looking at, well, how do we grow it? And one of the things I had identified very early on is that relationship with my customers is so important. You know, I'm taking care of their babies. And while some people might not agree that dogs are their babies, for a lot of people, that's the way they feel about them. So knowing how important that is, I felt like them knowing that I'm the owner, I'm present in the business makes them more comfortable. And I really felt that franchising would be the right way to grow because of that. You know, no one cares like the owner. No one is as committed as the owner. And I really felt that was the logical way to grow because of that.
Absolutely. Well, I definitely could relate to people, you know, identifying their dogs as babies. As you know, and as a lot of people know that follow me, my dog, Dolce, has her own Twitter page and Facebook page. So, yeah, I can relate to it.
Yeah, that would be one of those signs. Signs you're a true dog lover when your dog tweets.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it is people respond to her. She's got followers. She's got people responding to her. It's really funny. And then they get their dogs to respond. So it is really quite comical, but it is warming nonetheless.
I was just going to make a comment about your Twitter and your dog. I was going to say a lot of people feel that when they're tweeting as their dog, they're more open and comfortable being kind of silly
right.
and cutesy. And so you see, I would probably say, honestly, about a third of the people that follow me are probably dogs.
That's funny. That is great. You know, today we're talking about franchising and social media, and you and I met early last year through social networking, Twitter, I believe, and also I think it was right around the time I was doing a telephone discussion with a CEO focus group. I know you're very active in attending local franchise meetings and networking events, you know, especially being located close to Washington, D.C. How has Twitter helped you expand and strengthen your professional network within the franchise community, and what specific benefits have you realized that directly contributed to your social networking efforts?
Well, first of all, while I certainly prefer Twitter, there's lots of other ways I think you can get yourself out there and learn, but that's probably had the biggest benefit for me. I wasn't quite an early adopter, but I started on it started messing with it 2008, 2009. I really committed myself to focusing on it, and it has been unbelievable how much I've learned, and some of the folks, you know, you included in that group for sure, that I've met that I would never have access to otherwise. You know, the IFA conference is great, but it's only once a year. So the fact
Let me stop you there real quick, because yes, the IFA conference is great. You and I have met through Twitter. We've communicated a lot. We see a lot of each other's posts and activity indirectly, and yet we were both at the IFA conference and didn't get a chance to meet in person.
That's right. There were several people that as soon as I got back, I got tweets from them going, "Where were you?" And I said, "Well, I was there, but, you know, 3,000 people, if I could sort it the way I can sort my my Twitter groups, I would have met everybody. But since
yeah.
I couldn't do that, there's, you know, limited time to get around and meet. But, you know, it does go to show you, though, what an enormous benefit it is having peers to talk to and to discuss with.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, we're still a baby franchise in the grander scheme of things. So I really enjoyed learning from franchisors who've been there, done that, and then certainly all of the companies that work with franchisors. So it's been tremendously helpful for me. I've found vendors online. I've found new companies to work with through Twitter. It's been really great. So that's been a great one. LinkedIn has also been really helpful in that respect.
Yes, it's a great tool. It's a great communication platform. I love sharing information on LinkedIn, especially in the discussion groups where a lot of people say, "God, do you ever sleep? You're always there." I guess I am. You know, and it was because of our conversation, you know, I was thinking about, God, you know, we both were at the IFA event. You traveled all the way from your area down to San Antonio. I was living in Houston, now living in San Antonio in this short period of time, and traveled over, and we missed each other. And I was thinking about that. I'm saying there's got to be a plan to put in place before you go to these in-person events, and actually just posted one a couple of days ago, some tips that I found online about what to do before you go to a in-person event, and it's a lot of people are using it right now and email me about it before they attended the multi-unit conference up in Las Vegas right now that's going on, and they said, you know, it was good having a plan, and, you know, so hopefully I can practice what I preach, and maybe the next time we won't miss each other.
Yeah, well, it's really, I think, like any meeting where if you take those extra 5, 10, 15 minutes to plan, I probably would have been a little
right.
more effective.
Absolutely. You know, have your Dogtopia franchisees embraced social media? I know they haven't embraced them like you have, but have they embraced it?
I would say much like the general population, there are some that are very committed to it and believe in it, and then there are others that are skeptical, and then there are others that just don't really feel comfortable communicating in that way. We have a kind of interesting mix of folks, but I do think, though, it's been helpful because I know if I'm putting it out there, the 10 of our franchisees that I know follow me on Twitter will then see that message that I'm putting out, and usually it's instructional related to small business, media, marketing, and then I also include it in the newsletters I sent to them. I include all the information
sure.
I've been putting out there. So some of them have gotten really good. One of the things we use it a lot for is promoting events in our stores. We just recently did Mutt Madness, and we do that, you know, in March, during March Madness. So we celebrate the NCAA tournament by having a
nice.
Dress-up day. Yeah, so Dolce could have dressed in her favorite team's clothes, and they come in, and usually they're jerseys and things, and we take photos, or they submit them, and then there's a contest online. We do brackets, and we kind of bracket down. So we're in the middle of that right now, but one of the best things about Twitter, though, is you post those events up there, and they get retweeted and passed around, and it's amazing where they end up, and it's amazing how many customers find me that way and are so excited about it. So that's been really neat, and that's worked really well. It's also worked well for any potential press or journalists who are following me on Twitter if they see, well, hey,
right.
this event could be worthy of me sending out a photographer.
That's awesome. You know, I was chuckling when you said even Dolce, because my daughters love dressing her up. She's got, you know, three Halloween costumes. One is she dresses up like a pumpkin, and then the other one was a basketball jersey, and she's actually got four tennis shoes that she hates to wear, but they look quite comical. So I guess I could have dressed her up in a Texas A&M University jersey and parade her on. That's funny.
Well, maybe next year you can submit.
Yeah, I will do it. At the very least, I'll send you a video. What, you know, I know just like the general population, you have the people that embrace it, people that are middle of the road, and people that, you know, no, there's no way I can get involved. What's the perception of the other group, the group that is not embracing social media within Dogtopia? What is their perception of your active involvement and level of involvement within social media?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think for people that don't understand the benefit are the same people that maybe don't understand the concept of building a brand. Because, you know, we actually just had our conference last month here, and we talked a lot about brand. And while we only have 21 open locations, and they are somewhat spread out, we're building a brand. And we really talked a lot about how they represent the brand. And while they may feel like, you know, being the only one in Denver, Colorado is a disadvantage, they have such a huge advantage to shape and grow that brand there. So it's a challenge, because I think some of them clearly don't understand the benefit. They don't see a direct ROI. You know, they want to say, well, if I blog once a week, how many new customers am I going to get? And it doesn't work that way, as you well know. And, you know, so I can have that conversation. And then some of them, you just have to say, well, hopefully they'll come around to it. And a lot of them have. And I would say one of the things they always ask, well, what good is Twitter anyway? And I use it also as a directional. And that's how most of our franchisees use it. So we have a site
right.
called Doggy Blogging. So I'll tell them, you know, put your bigger message on the blog site, but direct them to it with Twitter. You know, put
right.
something interesting out there that'll kind of attract the eye, like, hey, we're celebrating Mutt Madness. Come check out the pictures. They're hilarious. And then it gets them to your blog, and hopefully they then sign up for your newsletter. Maybe they mark the page to come back and check it later. That's probably one of the smart ways, I think, for particularly franchisees to use it. You know, no one expects you to post informational pieces all day long, but you can certainly help direct people to your blog where maybe they make more of a connection with your store.
Right. I always refer to Twitter as that glob of glue that sits in the middle of the whole program that's not quite hard enough that you can't, you know, dislodge it, but yet it's elastic enough that it stretches out and it points this way, but it snaps it back and points it the other way. And to me, it's the main component of keeping things multifaceted, on a multi-level format, multi-tiered. I always refer to it like social media being a Rubik's Cube and traditional media being a tic-tac-toe board on a flat piece of paper.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, it's a three-dimensional aspect, but I think it's that Twitter, that glue that sits in the middle, that floats around, that helps direct and helps pull back and redirect. So I'm glad to hear you say that it uses it as directional, because it is absolutely a fabulous tool in that regard. Now, having embraced social media yourself, what advice can you give other franchise leaders with respect to doing the same, both personally and for their organizations?
That's a great question, because one of the things I had to determine early on, I was originally tweeting as @Dogtopia, because I felt, well, I'm going to build my brand with it. I'm going to help get awareness about the company out there. But then I thought, well, then that's not really appropriate to kind of put my opinions on my company's brand. It really should be the brand that is Amy Nichols, and the brand that is Dogtopia should be separate, and it should be completely focused on our business and, you know, dogs. So we split early on, and I would say that's one of the biggest ones first to figure out is, you know, what is your goal? If your goal is to create more of your own personal brand, which is really mine with my Twitter account, then you need to really focus on that. And then decide, you know, what kind of tweets are you going to put out there? For franchisees, it's completely different. I think you need to look at, you know, what's going to get them into your store, what's going to get them engaged with you as a customer. But I would warn franchisors that haven't looked into it is that they're probably doing it. You just may not be aware of it. And the problem is if you don't get involved early, you're going to lose out on the opportunities to have a consistent brand across the business. You know, one of the things we did is we made it early on a pretty simple template, you know, a tweetback, a background for your Twitter page, so that everybody that tweets online is using that same one so they look like Dogtopia. We did that with our blog early on. We created a blog template so everybody looks the same when they're blogging, because if you don't do that, they're going to find another alternative, and hopefully it'll encourage them to use it if we make it a little easier for them. So I think that's the two big things.
Right, yeah, you bring out a big point. They miss the franchisors may miss out, and there are social media activity going on by some of their franchisees out there. And I think that's the biggest problem, because I know I'm working with quite a few franchise companies that are in that position right now and trying to pull it back in order to develop a consistent program moving forward has been quite daunting, because a lot of franchisees that have taken it on their own have done a very marvelous job at developing some of their own social media, but it might not be in line with the same look and appearance of the trademark, of the brand. There's no consistency, because if you have multiple franchisees that have already done social media successfully in a bunch of different ways, but they may be different from each other. So it's really been a situation that's been very difficult to deal with, but we've been using a convince rather than demand scenario, embracing them and what they've done, and encouraging them to help. And it's working in a lot of organizations right now. But certainly, if your organization is a startup and you haven't done a lot of social media yet, now's the time to, you know, grab at it, embrace it, put together the program, and as you just said, Amy, it's real important to know what your goals are before you step out, not only in Twitter, but obviously in any social media.
You know, and we're in that special FDD renewal time of year, if they haven't, this is a great time to put something in there that addresses, you don't even have to go into specifically social media, but use of the company brand, trademark, et cetera, online, and what you can and can't do. And I think even something as simple as saying, you know, when you're online and you're tweeting or you're putting on LinkedIn, you represent the brand, you represent Dogtopia, and you need to do things with that in mind. And then the other layer is employees. You know, you could have employees. Look at what happened with Domino's. You know, it was an employee that tweeted something inappropriate and had a huge backlash. So, you know, it's never too late, but I think it's only going to get harder as more and more people get involved.
You know, to that point, do you have social media guidelines established for the franchisees and your employees?
We do. I would say it's pretty basic at this point, and I could probably go in more depth with it. But for the most part, it's, you know, use good common sense, don't say things that you wouldn't say to someone's face, that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I mean, you'd like to think you don't have to have those conversations, but, you know, until you do, you really can't hold people accountable if they do something and they say, well, you never told me. So,
sure, absolutely.
Mostly we've been more concerned with employees. I think, you know, our franchisees are smart. They have good common sense. They're not going to put something inappropriate, but I do worry about someone on their team that could potentially put something in a blog that might be a little borderline.
Sure, absolutely. And as we know, the internet lasts forever.
Right.
You know, I've seen multiple benefits of using social media within franchise organizations. You know, when utilized effectively, I've seen, you know, increases in brand awareness, enhancement of traditional marketing messages, and even interest in franchise opportunities. Have you experienced some of these benefits at Dogtopia?
I would say, yeah, you know, back to kind of the concept of layering it, you mentioned, you know, people have this idea that you're everywhere or that I'm everywhere because I've got postings all over the place. Well, that's kind of a bit of a trick that you can do, where if you put enough out there, you appear much larger than you actually are. And so that's one of the things I've always tried to do. You know, it's great that we were in USA Today, but it runs for one day. And unless you're in a hotel on that day, you're not going to see it. So then I take it, and it's my job to put it everywhere. And, you know, and if there's that line of you don't want to be boastful, but at the same time, you got in the paper because you did something right. You should be proud, and you should promote it. So, you know, you then take it and put it everywhere. You know, you link to it on your LinkedIn. You put it on your main webpage. You put it on your blog. You tweet about it, and you keep it cycling. I got a tweet last week from someone I knew in high school who had just read that article, and it was in September of last year. And they're like, wow, way to go, because for them it felt new. You know, they just
Absolutely.
Saw it, so it appeared new to them, you know, even though it was 6 months old or more. They just saw it for the first time, so it was new. So it's almost, you know, I don't want to abandon some of those big PR hits you get and really kind of layer it out there. So, and it does make you appear to be in lots of different places.
Oh, absolutely. I know when I was interviewed for Entrepreneur Magazine's January issue, the Franchise 500, the article Franchising Goes Social, you know, I posted it, of course, everywhere and tweeted it and put it on Facebook and LinkedIn and in my blog. And even to this day, here it is, you know, 3-4 months later since it's hit the streets. And I am still getting it. Even people from high school are saying, wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is good. Definitely makes you appear larger than you are. But, you know, with that in mind, because that is all a form of communications. Do you feel that social media has improved communications throughout your franchise organization?
I do think so. I think it adds multiple touch points. You know, I can't be on the phone every day with every franchisee, but all of them can see if I tweet something or I post it on my blog or, you know, even the old-fashioned, it's not old-fashioned yet, I guess, but email newsletters. You know, we still do send
mm-hmm.
those out, but they can get a daily read, and I also have my Twitter updating our main, you know, business page and my own blog. So
right.
It's a good way for them to be able to check in and kind of, you know, check the pulse of the company. So I would say absolutely yes. It's also helped enabled me to help them promote things. You know, if one of my franchisees has, for example, the Mutton Madness party going on, I can tweet it out to all my followers, and you know, it might be that one of them is in Houston, Texas, and they go, oh wow, that's really neat. I wouldn't have known about that otherwise. So
right.
I can almost provide them more assistance now with social media as far as promoting their individual store projects and things.
Now, with the franchisees that have embraced social media, do you see that social media has helped create or strengthen the relationships they have between each other?
I think so. Actually, one of the things we use is we have on our intranet, we have this great fancy discussion board, and nobody uses it. So we said, well, geez, how are we going to do this? So what we did, and this is I have to give credit to my marketing manager, Alex, who came up with this. She said, you know what if we just try doing a Google discussion group, because then it's emailed to them, and they're, you know, constantly, you know, in front of that and see it. Whereas with the intranet, they really only go there a couple times a week as to post their royalties, et cetera. So it's been a huge hit, and
yeah.
They love it. And so they use that, and I would say that's increase their communication between each other probably 200-300%. You know, it used to be that our West Coast folks kind of talk to each other and our East Coast folks kind of talk to each other. Well, now we're seeing it, you know, across the country. You know, we're still the same brand, so a question in California is relevant in, you know, Wilmington, Delaware. So I think that's been a huge benefit for them.
Yeah, I know, having run a couple of large franchise organizations with several hundred franchisees, the franchisees basically didn't know each other.
Right.
They saw, you know, the occasional cut and paste newsletter back in the day that went out, you know, once a month because it was difficult to get out and you had
right.
to print it and all those costs. And, you know, so they saw a couple of pictures there. And, of course, you know, the national conference was usually only attended by, you know, 30 or 40% of the franchisees. So a lot of the franchisees did not know each other. And I definitely see through social media where now they can learn more about them and communicate more and share information. And of course, with full transparency, I mean, that's just an awesome benefit to a franchise organization.
Yeah, one of the things we found is it actually takes a lot of the direct support off of my management team here. Not because we didn't want to do it, but we found that it's a lot more valuable to franchisees to hear from each other. So when someone would have normally just emailed a member of my team about a question in their facility, now they're posting on this Google group, and we're on it as well. So if no one answers in 24 hours, we'll usually chime in. But you know, 9 times out of 10, a franchisee will provide a great answer, and it has a lot more validity than maybe if I had answered or someone else on my team, which, you know, we all know that, that it is a little more valuable hearing from another franchisee sometimes than home office. So that's been
Absolutely.
Great. It's taken some emails out of my inbox, that's for sure.
Well, that is great. Yeah, and that's important too, you know, even, you know, customer review sites and stuff like that are an extension of social media. And I know right now they're an extension of local business listings, and it gets real-time search results. So it's important. There's a lot more social media out there than what we commonly refer to as, you know,
right.
LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. You know, it appears, as I said at the beginning of the show, that you're everywhere. Everywhere I turn, I see Amy Nichols, CEO at Dogtopia, you know, USA Today, Fox Business News, The Wall Street Journal. I mean, obviously, you're getting a great deal of exposure for yourself and for Dogtopia. Now, how does social media play into your overall public relations efforts?
Well, I can tell you one of the real easy ones is by having a blog that I regularly update. It's a great place to point journalists. So not only will they maybe find me, hopefully, but when someone does have a question and they say, well, what's your background? What are you all about? It's another place to direct them. They can read that and in 15, 20 minutes get a lot more out of my blog than maybe if they would have talked to me for an hour on the phone. So that's been really
right.
helpful with that. And also is a great place for me to list other, you know, pieces of media. I'm sure you well know that when you're in a publication, other people find you, and that provides validity to you. Am I any different after Wall Street Journal wrote about us than before? No, not at all. But we're viewed differently. So now Fox Business can say, oh, Amy Nichols was recently profiled in the Wall Street Journal, and now all of a sudden I appear a little smarter, you know, a little more successful maybe. And you know, it's that's everything, right? Perception. So that I think has helped a lot. You know, you're really building up your brand and your image by what you put out there. And I do try to be very cognizant of that when I, you know, occasionally I'll put a silly tweet or two out there. But for the most part, I'm trying to continually push this same message that I'm all about small business, you know, smart use of small business owners, that kind of stuff. So that's a big thing. It comes back again to that validity. And, you know, people still do look at the Internet as, well, if it's on the Internet, it must be true. Right? So.
Right. Absolutely. Well, you know, with that in mind, I want to ask you a question.
Unless it's something bad about me, and then it's not true.
No, it's not something bad about you, because it's a question that I ask myself all the time, because as everybody knows, I'm quite active in social media as well. Do you find, in asking yourself this question, do you find sometimes that you might be asking yourself, am I being too self-promoting?
That's an interesting question. I think if we've got, you know, we had a relatively big media hit for us the end of last quarter of 2009. And so I'd say maybe a little bit I felt that way then. But for the most part, I break it up in thirds. You know, a third of my tweets I want to be informational, so I want to put something original up there that maybe someone else hasn't mentioned yet. A third are probably retweets of other smart tweets or, you know, references to blog pages that I thought were smart. And then a third usually are a little lighter. Only do I get into really about me when there's been a big article written or if I'm going to appear on something on TV or something. But yeah, it's absolutely true. And you have to think about, well, how am I being perceived right now? And
right.
Yeah, you don't want to sound like you're tooting your own horn all the time, right?
Well, I mean, you know, it is a part of it. It is a way of communicating. And I do know, and one of the things that I tell a lot of my franchise clients, I said, if you usually go on Twitter every day at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, and that's the only time during the day you go on, you're only going to attract the same audience pretty much every day.
That's absolutely true.
So, but if you do it, you know, once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once in the evening, and jockeying around from day to day, you're going to attract a lot of different people. So what you may come across as, you know, being self-promoting or repetitive or redundant might not come across that way because you're attracting a different audience at different times of the day. So
you're right. You're the only
important one
that knows you tweeted it four times. I mean, it is
exactly
when it comes down to it. And you're absolutely right. You get a very different audience at 10 a.m. Eastern than 5 p.m. Eastern because 5 p.m., the whole West Coast is on and very active. And I've absolutely found that to be true. And then sometimes I'll tweet later on in the evening because the West Coast is still active in their busy working day.
Sure.
So you're absolutely
yeah.
right. And if it's a big event for us, like one of our big charity events, I will absolutely do the countdown and tweet it multiple times because I feel that it's that important and we want to get as much, you know, attention to it as we can.
Right. And I'll tell you, it's definitely a different crowd at 3 o'clock in the morning on Twitter.
Okay.
I know you have successfully utilized social media to promote new franchise openings in particular markets. Basically, you've used social media as an extension of or a complement to your public relations efforts. Can you share some of what you've done and accomplished in this regard?
Well, one of the things you can do is, you know, Twitter's gotten a lot more search-friendly, and LinkedIn for that matter. So one of the things you can do is you can actually look up journalists and reporters in those markets and follow them. I wouldn't necessarily directly solicit them right away, but I at least know that if I put the message out that those people are going to get it, whether they see it and act on it or not. Or what I'll do is I'll actually put when I put in the message, I will add their, you know, at name to it. So if it's at Joe Journalist, I'll add them when I put an announcement out. And that way, you know, it gets in front of them. And that's actually helped quite a bit because they can't possibly know everything that's going on, you know, in their market.
No.
So
definitely
I found
make
that
their
to be
job
really
easier.
Yeah.
Right. You
yeah.
definitely make it easier for them. Well, good. What is there anything else you'd like to add regarding, you know, for particular? I know you've used it for grand openings and events for specific franchisees. What other ways have you used it?
You know, we'd like to get into, we've been tinkering around with doing like day of type things, like, hey, come in today, it's half off daycare. We actually did that just recently for Mutt Madness, and it did get tweeted around a lot when there's a time constraint on that. So absolutely some of our customers saw it and it worked. So I think I know Taste of Delight had a ton of success with that and several other franchise companies where they do a day of promotion. So it's tough when we don't have nearly as many units, so we don't have the coverage, but we have found that to be helpful, and we're encouraging our franchisees to do it. But the thing I can help them with is they can tweet it once, well, then I can then push it out and maybe even multiple times to get maybe even a little more coverage.
Right. And I know you're on Facebook. And do you use Facebook from a professional standpoint, from a business standpoint, or from a personal standpoint, or do you use it as a combination?
I have very particular thoughts on that, actually. I look at Facebook as more of a personal thing. So unless I know someone like yourself, I usually don't accept them as a friend. I try to keep business out of there. You know, and it's very true, and it's not to – if it's someone I don't know and I've never talked with, I don't friend them. And that's because that's where my family information is. And it's, you know, for the most part, it's college friends and family, and I try to keep that
sure.
way. I feel like I'm in enough other places, you know. I can always send them, you know, somewhere else. But for the most part, it'll be people that just don't know me, and they're just looking because they found something in my, you know, bio that is related to their business. So
right.
I kind of limit that one on purpose.
Now, does Dogtopia have a fan page?
Absolutely, yes. So I would send them there, and I know if they're looking to get to me, that's the way that they'll figure it out and go there. So, yeah, and
sure.
you know, much like when I said I split in the beginning and I did my at Amy Nichols and I did at Dogtopia, my marketing manager does the at Dogtopia. So We've got that one kind of going up. But again, it has a different goal in that it's more about awareness. We put cute pictures on it, you know, lots of doggy stuff. So very different than what I'm tweeting about.
Sure. You know, it was amazing when I set up Dolce's Facebook page and Twitter page. It was when I had entered it into the Purina Cutest Dog Competition.
Oh,
and I was amazed that she got through to the 20th round. I think it was 24 rounds. And it was amazing how social media really helped her. She got quite a following. There's a lot of people voting. I think she was the cutest dog and didn't win. So I asked for a recount but didn't get it.
Yeah, online but, it's often not the cutest or the smartest. It's the one with the best connections, right?
That's it. And I wish I had started out earlier because it was 3 or 4 weeks into it. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Actually, my daughter had started it. She enlisted her in it. And I thought after the first few weeks, wait a minute, I'm involved in social media. She's a brand. I can get this. I can make this happen. And, of course, it eliminated the arguments of who was going to split the $1 million prize. So, anyway, so it's probably good that she lost.
Well, we did that with Mutt Madness, too. It's a lot of our clients retweeted their dogs and their photos and said, please go vote, which was fantastic for us because they're sending them to my webpage.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's just awesome. You know, there's been ongoing discussions within LinkedIn franchise groups about social media and financial performance representations. Do you have an opinion on that topic?
I find that very interesting, and I happen to be fortunate enough that I work with Ackerman Center Fit, Shelley Weatherby in particular. So I've always been very cognizant of this from the beginning, that you don't want to mislead. And as you mentioned already, you put it out there, it's out there. You know, it doesn't matter if you delete something later, it's out there already. So you have to be so careful. I definitely draw a line. If someone asks specific questions like, well, how are your stores doing? I'll take it offline. You know, I can talk to someone on the phone or take it into personal email, but that's a slippery slope. So I personally don't do any kind of references towards that. As far as talking about even how the stores are doing in any way close to financial, I think it's just a bad idea.
Right. It definitely is. And I know there are some people that are going to try to manipulate it, like I mentioned at the top of the show. There's also some people that do it very unintentionally and very inadvertent. And you just have to be careful. And a lot of that has to do with referencing, you know, an article or something like that. It's one thing for an article to be published and there'd be a reference to it, but it's how you use that article, whether it be as an enticement or not, to somebody to look at your franchise opportunity. So absolutely.
When I get interviewed, which they always want to know numbers. Everybody wants to know numbers. That's more exciting, right? So they want to know, well, how much did your stores do? I do have an earnings claim, an FPR, so I know exactly what I can say and what I can't, which is I can say what's in my FPR, but no more. And, you know, we did it for multiple reasons, but so I'm very comfortable talking about that. But then I'll say, well, there's a limit. I can't get into profitability and those other things. All we put in there is gross revenue. I can talk to you a little bit about that. So being, you know, kind of aware when you go into an interview of, you know, don't get overexcited and start talking about how much certain stores did, or they're going to print it, and you're going to go back, and you could get yourself in trouble down the road.
A lot of trouble, especially in the registration states, without a doubt. You know, that franchise seller's handbook that they put out, your law firm put out, is just a fabulous reference tool. Joe sent it to me, and I know you know Joe Caruso as well. And I've read that book about 5 times already. And in the past week, it's a small manual, but boy, it is to the point, and everybody should have that. Matter of fact, they should be required to have it before they even think about selling franchises.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think people don't. I know quite a few people that are even younger in franchising than we are, and that's something that I always warn people about. Much like starting any business, you're really just so in it in the beginning. It's hard to kind of take a breath and look at the big picture, but I said, you've got to always keep that in mind, because what you don't want down the road is confusion and a potential lawsuit, because that can just be devastating. So it's a hard thing to remember. You know, they want to do fun, exciting ads for their franchise, but you got to be real careful about your language in advertising and, for that matter, on social media.
Sure. And what an absolute drain on time and financial resources, even defending yourself in some of those type of suits. It's terrible. Well, you know, the franchise industry has seen a evolution of franchise recruitment lead generation strategies over the years, and the way they've done business and sold franchises. What are your thoughts on future lead generation?
Well, it's actually interesting because we've been meeting about that recently because for us, 2009 was really about maintaining and getting better at what we do. And 2010 for us, I say begin again in 2010, is about, okay, let's get back focused on growing now. You know, we did a lot of work on 2009 on the 21 stores. Now let's focus on growing. And I think there's a lot of creative ways via LinkedIn and Twitter and some others to really get it out there. I haven't been actively touting that and talking about that, and that is something that I'm going to start working on a little more of. Okay, I've got my feet under me with social media. I got a pretty good understanding of it all. I think it's now starting to talk about, hey, how can you join us? You know, become a part of what Dogtopia is all about. And I get it, it's validity. You know, if they see an ad and then they do a quick Google search on Amy Nichols or Dogtopia, they're going to get a tremendous amount of information. And that's a huge benefit because now I've given them hours of reading they can do so they know that much more about us. And I used to worry that my blog, if someone read it and they didn't agree, that they then wouldn't want to be a franchisee. And then the more I thought about it, and I said, well, if they don't agree with how we run the business, they shouldn't be a franchisee anyway. So,
right.
You know, you it's funny how that works. But I thought, you know, if I put out there what we're really all about, what our values are, you know, why we're in business, why we care about the things that we do, then hopefully we're going to attract those people. By putting it all out there, it's just that much more information that they can almost self-select, you know, before they even get to me. So let's hope that that's the case anyway.
Well, I agree because I do believe that today's franchise candidate and consumer are more technologically advanced, they're more educated, they're more sophisticated than ever before. And, of course, coming out of a downturn in the economy, and hope we are coming out of it, that they're also more cautious, a little bit more anxious, but certainly more diligent than ever before. And where the franchise sales process used to be an A to Z process, where back in the old days, back before you became a franchisor, they either attended a, you know, franchise expo or they picked up a magazine like the Franchise 500
right.
Entrepreneurs
right.
issue or the Franchise Handbook and, you know, pointed to a couple that they want, and they called you on the phone or actually wrote a letter and said, please send me your brochure. And then, you know, from there, you know, you had a franchise qualification specialist call them, and you literally walked them through A to Z. Well, what we're seeing now, and I know you're probably seeing, a lot of franchisors are seeing it, is the process doesn't always start at A to Z. They know so much now before because of all the information that's out there and all the information that's in the search results that they know so much about it because they've done their homework. And
right.
then also what I'm finding, what I think is really going to be the coup de grace, if you will, with social media and lead generation strategies has to be tied to Google's real-time search results being entirely focused on social media activity and content. And the reason is I know, and you probably knew it as well, you know, when we did search results of our names probably back in November, you know, we saw our blog and we saw articles and we saw different places that we were. But, you know, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn weren't always on the first page.
Right.
Now, and I know this just as of mid-January, they are on the first page. They are in the first three or four search results. A matter of fact, the other day I had done a lot of work promoting you being on the show and BJ next week and Rhonda the following week and doing a lot of work on Twitter. That my Twitter account, my Twitter profile actually was my number one search result, and it
wow.
pushed my website to second. And I think that what that's going to create is people being able to look at something that's a little bit less static than a website that they know is basically propaganda. It's what we want them to read, and now they can, in essence, quote-unquote, stand next to you in your interactive communications and see how you communicate with, you know, other candidates, consumers, other industry professionals, and then, of course, if they're looking at a franchise, more importantly, with other franchisees. So I really think social media is going to get tremendously stronger and be a more vital part of integration and integrated marketing and lead generation strategies for certain.
Yeah, and you made a point earlier about kind of watching your brand and things. The one thing I would tell people is, especially franchisors, but even franchisees, is if you're not doing anything else, make sure you're getting Google alerts or tweet beeps or there's a social media alert. And that's where it's going to search the internet once a day and give you alerts. I have found issues that way. I mean, I've had things where a franchisee had a customer complaint. And while I'm not out there being big brother, so to speak, if I can help them by watching those things and then directing it to it so that they can then go and resolve it, that's a lot better for our brand than us just letting, you know, things out there. You know, in this day and age with Yelp and several other sites that are really out there to get lots and lots of customer interaction, you know, there's nowhere to hide anymore. You know, someone's going to post something somewhere, and you're better off knowing about it, I think, than hoping it doesn't exist.
Did you happen to see my post, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, about Yelp?
Yeah, it's been an interesting controversy around Yelp.
Well, yeah, I got it from another site, the social media law attorney, and for some reason her name escapes me, but I reference it in that article. Yelp actually was accused of extorting money out of brands to take the complaints off their sites.
Right, and you know, so, and I still think that there could be some of that on other sites as well. I mean, how would
we without
know?
A doubt. Yeah,
in fact,
we would.
Somebody
know.
Wrote about it.
Yeah, that's a whole new world. Well, as the economy continues to show signs of recovery, and hopefully, and everybody's got their different opinion on the healthcare issue, hopefully it doesn't slow us down. What's your outlook for franchising?
Well, you know, I'm excited. I think you were starting to mention that people are still nervous and things. I've seen a real bounce back as far as consumer purchasing in our stores. So all of our open locations are on much, much better footing and are doing very well. The other side to that is the capital markets still haven't really opened up. So we're still having the same struggles as far as getting loans. So if we can't get lending going, then I can't grow my business. So, you know, we're trying to get creative with that and all that. But overall, I mean, if my customers are there and they want Dogtopia, we're going to find a way, you know, to bring Dogtopia to them. So I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, that's a very good outlook. But yeah, I agree with you. The capital markets have to open up, especially for the franchisors that have bricks and mortar type operations.
Right.
As many of us are aware, and as I brought up at the beginning of the show, Matt Shea, the president and CEO at the IFA, is leaving to join the National Retail Federation, and certainly he'll be missed. How do you believe his departure will impact the IFA and franchising?
Well, I think the biggest differentiator is going to be who he's replaced with. I think he's been great in that I actually joined the IFA right after he had become CFO, and he was great. You know, and he certainly was a great leader and really took IFA to a whole new level. So I only hope that they'll find someone else. But, you know, the opportunity here, much like I've gone through with my own team, my own management team, is, well, now we could get a different skill set potentially. You know, so maybe there could be someone brought in that does have more of a service business background as opposed to maybe retail or food. So there's an opportunity to bring a little more balance maybe into the IFA and another perspective that'll just help us grow even more.
I think that's a good point. I understand they've started their search, but I haven't heard of any anybody's name rising to the top yet. So it certainly will be interesting, to say the least. I actually, on April 15th, I'll have Scott Lair with the IFA that will be on Franchise Today as well. And then shortly after that, we'll be going into our lawyer segment, our legal segment of Franchise Today in the month of May. So I'm sure we'll be discussing it. Well, Amy, where does the time go? I really appreciate you being my guest on Franchise Today, and for sharing your thoughts and insight. I wouldn't expect anything less, of course, as transparent as you are online. And I'd love to have you on again in the future, and maybe we could talk about the 40th or 50th Dogtopia opening up at that point.
That would be great. I really look forward to that.
Yeah. Well, for more information about Dogtopia, please check out their website at www.dogdaycare.com. And, of course, don't forget to follow Amy on Twitter at Amy Nichols. Remember, next week, the series on franchising and social media continues with Tasty Delights. BJ Emerson is my guest. And then, of course, in 2 weeks, Rhonda Sanderson will help me wrap up our three-part series. Today's segment will be available on demand shortly after the show. Thanks to all our loyal listeners to help make Franchise Today one of the leaders in franchise media today. I'm Paul Segretto, and here's to a great weekend. And as we always say, please be safe.